Before we begin, if you want to join our growing group of supporters and give $5, $10 or $20 a month to help make the show even better, you can sign up to the Harder Reports Patreon right now and get exclusive access to full, unedited interviews with guests. That's the Harder Reports Patreon at patreon.com/TheHarderReport. And now, today's episode. Hello and welcome to the Harder Report. My name's Edward Hardy, and for today's interview, I'm joined by Richard Ojeda, the national spokesperson for No Dem Left Behind. Richard Ojeda, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate this. Always look forward to meeting new folks, and always love these types of conversations.
For those that haven't heard about No Dem Left Behind before, could you give us an explanation of the organization and what it's seeking to do here?
Absolutely. Well, No Dem Left Behind basically is an organization that reaches out to Democrats that are running in rural red districts. And these are Democrats that we research and we say, hey, this person's got a phenomenal message, great vision, and, you know, has the potential to really shake things up and possibly even turn a red seat blue. Now, the majority of people that are No Dem Left Behind are people that the DCCC, which is the largest Democratic organization that we have concerning campaigns and elections, you know, these are the people that they say, you know, it might be a little too tough for them to win. So we're not going to, you know, sink any funds for them. So that's where we come in and say, you know what? We've looked at these folks and we think they have phenomenal vision. We love their platform and we're going to support them. Now, I will tell you this. If we look about what's going on right now in the state of Kentucky, we have Amy McGrath, and she is running neck and neck with a guy by the name of Booker. But the DCCC has sunk literally $15 million in Amy McGrath, and it's a neck and neck race. There's the possibility that Amy McGrath may not win that race. And if she doesn't win, then the DCCC basically invested $15,000 in a loss. But once again, you know, the Booker, you know, he's not one of our folks, but make no mistake about it. You know, when the DCCC invests all this money in candidates, you know, they do so because they think, this person's got the best shot. They're running against Mitch McConnell. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're selecting the person that the people agree with. You know, we're going down to these rural areas and we're supporting people that, you know, we believe wholeheartedly that can flip a red seat blue, and maybe they're not successful. Maybe we help them to get their message out. Maybe we help them to get some recognition. And then maybe in 2 years they do it again, and this time they win. And we have a couple candidates that are on their second races with us. And you know what? We feel pretty comfortable. We're going to pick some seats up.
That issue of the DNC sinking money into campaigns that are Democrat versus Democrat there, when there are campaigns that get very close to the margin with Democrats trying to flip red seats. Do you think this is part of the problem that exists here, where the Democratic Party at large is just neglecting these seats that are really potentially strong pickups? When you're looking at a House and a Senate that sometimes can be decided by the thinnest of margins, who gets control of that?
Well, I think that, you know, it's also what their vision is concerning a winnable race. You know, when remember, I was number one out of all 435 congressional races in turning red votes blue. After I won my primary, I didn't get the DCCC saying, hey, here we are. You know, it took a while for me to finally get added to the red to blue list and start to actually be able to raise the funding that I needed in that race. You know, had maybe they come a little beforehand, maybe I would have had a little bit more time, could have picked up more momentum, you know, would have got my face and my voice out a little sooner. Maybe that would have been the possibility. But, you know, I don't think that they wanted to touch my race until we finally basically got people like Joe Manchin and him to make a call and say, you know, look at this guy, look at his momentum, look at what he's doing right now in southern West Virginia and how these people are absolutely just, you know, flocking to his message. And that's what it was. Now, of course, I lost the race, but I will tell you right now, before Donald Trump come down to West Virginia, to southern West Virginia, and campaigned against me, I was up in the polls. You know, I just think that the DCCC being at the top, you know, they make their decisions and they select their candidates differently than what I think, you know, we do. And I think that when they lose races where they dump a bunch of money, I think that question that you asked is absolutely the right question. You know, is it worth it? Why do we do these things?
From those races that you've been involved in, what have you learned? You talked about some of it there, but what have you learned about how politicians view these rural parts of America, and how problematic is that? Because there's clearly an issue going on here where rural parts of America, they get dubbed flyover states and they get ignored by politicians in Washington, D.C. So what lessons did you learn from those campaigns?
Look, if you're gonna flip red seats blue, you can't do it by ignoring the areas. When you don't bring people, if you don't support people that have a good message in those rural areas, you can guarantee those areas will remain red. You know, we can't always basically bet the farm on the major populated areas, you know, carrying the Democrats over the line. You know, there's areas out here in this country that, you know, some people think have been forgotten by the Democrats. And I'll tell you right now, we've got to change that. And that's why us going into these rural red districts and giving these people a voice, helping these people raise funding, you know, and just educating people on our candidates, it's the right thing to do. And I believe that if people give our candidates their ear, I believe they're going to like what they see. You know, it didn't take me long at all to do a little research and go, wow, these are people that I've never really heard before. And now I'm looking at them and I'm going, they're great. I mean, you know, just they have phenomenal vision and they want to help. They want to fight and win, you know, these races. And here's the thing, too. When our people go to Washington, D.C., they didn't sell their soul to get there. They don't get to Washington, D.C. and get told on day one, all right, let's go second floor, get to the dungeon, get on them phones and start raising us money. Our candidates don't have to do that because our candidates didn't sell their soul.
When we look at places that are rural parts of America, we hear about how Congress focuses its attention on appealing to the more populated areas of America, the more that aren't rural. It ignores those rural parts of America, and policies are shaped around these swing states rather than these rural states that might previously have been controlled by Republicans for 20, 30 years. What do you believe the key issues are here that politicians should be focusing on to appeal to the individuals in No Dem Left Behind's coalition of districts?
Well, we got to get out there. I mean, we got to be in those areas. A lot of places around here don't know, you know, what the Democrats look like. You know, they don't see a lot of the Democrats. I live in an area that now is all three of our congressional members are Republican. You know, one of our state senators is Republican. I'm now looking around and I'm realizing that, you know, in West Virginia, the House and the Senate is controlled by the GOP. You know, and I'm telling you right now, that's not going to change unless we get people out there that's willing to go in these rural areas and take the Democratic message to the people. And I think that, you know, when you ignore those places, it lets those Republicans feel like they've got a guaranteed victory in those areas. And sadly, if you don't pay attention to those people and the Republicans do, who do you think they're going to support? I mean, let me tell you something. I come from a place that was Democrat. Democrat ran. Democratic, this state was for 88 years, the Democrats. And now it's all Republicans. And I'll tell you, it's a scary sight to see. And then when you realize that the things out there that are supposed to be fighting for the Democrat Party fights for the working class. The Democratic Party fights for the elderly. The Democrat Party fights for the veterans. The Democratic Party tries to create opportunities for those who live in poverty to elevate themselves out of poverty. And, you know, in West Virginia, that's what we have. We have a lot of poverty down here. But right now, the unions who historically are the ones that fight to elect Democrats to be the voice of the working class citizens, they're endorsing Republicans now. I'm looking at the endorsement lists of all these unions in the AFL-CIO and all these other unions across the state, and I'm seeing Republican, Republican, Democrat, 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 Republican, Democrat. And I'm like, you show me one Republican that wins office and then goes to the capitals and fights right to work legislation. They don't, and you won't see that. But sadly, we don't have Democrats in these areas willing to stand up and fight. And when we do, they don't get supported. I mean, remember, right now, the unions in West Virginia have chose to not endorse the first district, the third district, and now I know that they're not endorsing the Democrat in the U.S. Senate. They're basically trying to give. They're trying to give Shelley Moore Capito a free ride to another 6 years where she can continue voting to not raise minimum wage while she votes to raise her pay, and while she can continue voting against equal pay for men and women. Thank you, unions, for giving us another 6 years of Carol Miller that is not going to care about the poor people in our state. But don't worry about it. You got what you wanted. And that's the problem that we have in this country.
No Dent Left Behind's website states that in the past decade, average rent prices have increased by nearly 40%, but wages have not increased at the same rate. Do you think these are issues that, in a way, are easy wins for Democrats? Democrats support raising the minimum wage to a national $15 minimum wage. And it's something that would really help those people in those rural areas of America who currently live in poverty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, first and foremost, trickle-down economics has been tried by every Republican president that we've had since Reagan. And it's always been nothing more than a free cash grab for the people at the top and the people at the bottom. What do you mean? They didn't create jobs. Oh, well, our fault. But they try to push it over and over again, just like Trump just recently did with the largest tax grab ever. But trickle-up economics does work. You know, when you put money into the pockets of the people at the bottom, they spend it locally in the economy. You know, it's like we're talking UBI. You know, if you're talking about UBI and you're giving everybody $1,000 a month, where do you think they're going to spend that money? How many people do you know that are average citizens have offshore accounts? How many people that you know that are average citizens shove money in a mattress? Very, very, very few. But you know what they will do with that money? They will spend it on the economy. They'll fix their car. They'll do repairs on their home. They'll buy their kids better clothes. They'll get better insurance. Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter whatever they do. But it puts money in their pockets and in the end boosts the economy. If you're a mom and pop store and you don't get back out there, then you're crazy because of all that money that's available. But we see those things. We know that we've got poverty in these areas, and we know that we need people. You know, what's wrong with minimum wage? You know, going up. I mean, it hasn't moved in forever. The wages have been stagnant. You know, those are the people that should be absolutely right now fighting for better. And those are the people that need the voice from people like No Dem Left Behind. You know, but that's the thing is we got to get out there and we got to let these people know. Right now, you got people that are getting paid by minimum wage that are fighting. It's like they've been brainwashed to fight against their own best interests. And that's something that we have to change, but you can't change it unless you're down on the ground in their faces and educating them with facts. That's how you do it.
Do you think that's another systematic issue that exists in American politics, which politicians just don't understand what ordinary people in these states and these districts need and require, because they aren't ordinary people? You talked about Shelley Capito in the Republican Party, the Republican senator, voting to raise her pay while there are people in her state who are below the poverty line. Do you think there is an issue here that politicians just don't understand working?
Absolutely. Look, let's take Mitch McConnell. Let's take Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has one job. He is a U.S. senator. That salary is $174,000, $176,000 a year. He's turned that $174,000 a year into $26 million. I mean, does he understand what the people at the bottom need? Here's a person who wants to attack and do away with Social Security because he's never going to need it. But what he doesn't know is we got elderly people out here that absolutely without it will starve. Without it will not have medicine. But they don't care because they don't know what life is like at the bottom. Shelley Moore Capito votes against raising the minimum wage about 11 times while she's raised her own pay six. She doesn't understand that that person out there that's working at Wendy's and McDonald's, you know, when I was a kid and you went to Wendy's and McDonald's, do you know who was the people behind the counter? They were the kids I went to school with, 16, 17, 18 year olds that needed money for going out on the weekends. That's what Wendy's was. Go there now. And you see the person behind the cash register in their 50s and 60s because that's all they got. And you know what? They need a little more money, but they don't get it because we've got people at the top that have no concept of what life is like, what struggle is like for the average American. And that right there is why our No Dim Left Behind candidates, if you research them, you will absolutely like what you see, and you will see people who know what it's like to struggle. You will see people who's absolutely been just, I mean, drugged through the garden, and now they're standing up to fight for better. And we've got to give them that voice. And I believe that if people listen to what they say, I believe they're going to like what they hear, and they're going to support them.
One of the other big issues that really affects rural areas in particular is the issue of climate change. It's affecting those people who particularly are farmers, for example. Yet Congress, even though America as a whole agrees on certain steps forward to tackle climate change, Congress has just moved slowly and slowly. Again, a lot of people have linked that to the money in politics that exists because they're beholden to those corporate interests that don't want any action. What can be done here and what should be done to provide that opportunity to create a clean future that ensures these people in rural areas aren't being affected by rising temperatures, rising floodwaters, etc.?
Okay, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we had Republican, Democrat, and oh, by the way, the Transparency Party? let's just think of something like that. You know, because that's what goes on. Behind the scenes, big energy greases the pockets of these legislators to provide them protection. It's the same thing with the opioid epidemic. Big pharma greases the pockets to provide them protection. You know, but I come from an energy state. And I will tell you that when I was a state senator, I tried to push a resolution calling for an investigation into Appalachian Power. Because in my home state, I got people with single wide trailers, $700 a month electric bill. I got people that are putting plastic up and blocking off 75% of their home so they could just live in a bathroom, a living room, and they sleep in their kitchen. They sleep in the living room so that they can not have to heat or cool their whole house. And because of that, Appalachian Power in their contract is allowed to punish those people and say, well, we didn't make enough money from you all this time, so now we're going to raise everybody's rates. So I tried to push for an investigation because I think it's criminal what Appalachian Power is doing here in West Virginia. And guess what? When I'm sitting on the Senate floor, all of a sudden my resolution pops up on the screen behind the speaker president, the Senate president. And then it quickly disappeared. And he looked me in the eye and he went like this. And the reason for that is because Appalachian Power every single year greases the pockets of legislators to the tune of $186,000 in forms of $2,000 checks to all the people in the Capitol. And that's why we have a problem with this situation. But we can't get anything done because nobody knows what goes on behind the scenes. I'm the one that said, I think all lobbyists should wear body cameras, because if lobbyists wore body cameras, then the people out there would get to see and hear the conversations that their representatives have. And I believe that if they were under camera, they'd be far less likely to sell out their people. But that's the problem that we have. And that is exactly the problem. In West Virginia, coal operators have never wanted any competition. When I graduated from high school 30 years ago, dig coal, sell dope, join the army. Those were the three choices. Guess what they are today? Dig coal, sell dope, join the army. That's all we got. And anytime you talk about green energy jobs coming to West Virginia, it's the coal operators that are saying, that's going to kill the jobs. And then everybody starts screaming and they don't let them in. But that's because the coal operators are scared that they're not going to get that guaranteed line of 18-year-old boys straight out of high school to go into the mines so they can daggone wear them out.
You mentioned about that reaction to green jobs coming into the state. do you think this is a case of lobbyists trying to keep their own pockets full with cash while also ensuring that those ordinary people who would benefit, because you talk about the job opportunities in rural parts of America, because of the way that lobbyists and big corporations have operated, are few and far between compared to more populous areas of America. And when lobbyists scare away potential increase in jobs by bringing green technology, which would require building work and would require people to operate it and so on, away from the states, they're just not shooting themselves in the foot. They're shooting ordinary people in the state in the foot.
Absolutely. You know, we have natural gas. We now know that we have natural gas underneath our feet. And I tried to say, hey, let's raise the natural gas severance just a tad for the gas that leaves West Virginia so that we could use it for our teachers and state employee insurance, the PEI and all those things. That got shot down. That all got shot down. Nobody, those people, when I was a state senator, I can remember when the energy guys come into my office, and it was two guys and a very, very, very attractive young lady. And they wanted me to vote yes on a bill that basically would allow the gas companies to basically come on to your land and basically drain it dry and not have to give you nothing. And when I told them I was not for that at all of a sudden that pretty lady in the middle said, is there anything that maybe I could convince you or to talk to you about to change your mind? And I said, get your ass up and y'all can leave my office. That's the problem that we have. These people have a lot of power and they got a lot of money, and a lot of people don't have the guts to turn them down, you know, but that's what we have. Do you know that legislation is being pushed that now says that if a gas company wants to run a pipe across your land, if you stand up and say no, you're the one that can find yourself going to jail, getting fined, losing your land. Think about that. And that's what's going on in this country. And those are the kind of things that we need people to start standing up for the average citizen. But we don't, because we got people in Washington, D.C. that are lining their pockets with these people who are buying their ability to come onto our land and take what we have, and we get no say in it. Think about that. But that's what's going on.
On that point, if there are people out there who are listening to this interview, they want to know where they can find out more about the work of No Dem Left Behind. They can get involved. They can support these candidates out there. You've got a slate of candidates that are specifically being backed by No Dem Left Behind. Where can they do this? Where can they get that information and get involved so they can donate to you, donate to the candidates out there?
They can go to nodemleftbehind.com. They can donate. They can become an ambassador. If they could, you know, I do a lot of posts concerning No Dem Left Behind. They can go on my Facebook. They can look at some of my posts. They can donate there. And remember, we're also, it's a two-way line of communication. You know, we at No Dem Left Behind want people to contact us and say, hey, we got a person that's running in Iowa that absolutely is in a red district, but seems like a pretty solid candidate. We want to know. We want to reach out. We want to get to know these people. We want to have a conversation with these people because, you know, if they fit the mold and we feel that that's a great, and we're not out here looking for guaranteed wins. We're just looking for people that's got vision. And you know what? We're going to help these people. We're going to help these people build their name recognition. We're going to help these people get their word out. And they may not win this time, but maybe they win the next time. Or maybe they win the next time. You know, politics is a fight, and you don't always win. You know, I lost my first run at Congress because nobody knew who I was. But I did do quite well in my district of West Virginia. So the very next race, I ran for state senate, and I beat a 36-year politician, and I beat him good. It cost me my life, but I beat him good. You know, and I wasn't successful when I ran for Congress. I wasn't successful when I ran for the presidency, but I believe that I know that I went forward and I raised my voice. And I know for a fact there's a lot of people across this country know a hell of a lot about West Virginia, even though it was just learning them from my failures. There's a lot of people out here that know West Virginia deserves representation. West Virginia deserves to have more than what we get. We deserve to have a seat at the table. We gave you light. We gave you steel to build your cities. And we fought this nation's war per capita more than any. We deserve a little respect. And people across this country know that now.
Richard Ojeda, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thank you. Anytime.
That was Richard Ojeda, the national spokesperson for No Dem Left Behind. You can find out more about their work on Twitter at NDLB2020 or at nodemleftbehind.com. That's all for today's episode. What did you think about the interview? Let me know on Twitter at Edward T. Hardy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe, or recommend this podcast by submitting a review online and sharing it with friends and family. Thank you to this month's supporters on Patreon: Carolyn, Colin, Ibalashnikov, Janet, Jesse, Merrily, and Nikki, who helped make this show even better. Until next time, goodbye.